If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake. Inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. The Real Housewives franchise is famous for their fights, their wardrobe, and their taglines. But today's guest, Real Housewife of New Jersey, Jackie Goldschneider, can now add being a famous author to that list. In The Weight of Beautiful, Jackie shares her personal battle with anorexia and her road to recovery. With season 14 of The Real Housewives of New Jersey officially wrapped, we got Jackie to give us a glimpse into next season and what we have to look forward to. We talk about what her very first day looked like on set way back when, and how the other girls really know how to have a great housewife fight and what they taught her, what being demoted really meant for her and her family, and what it meant to have Teresa Giudice supporting her at her book signing. And now apparently their relationship is much more friendly. Jackie was so brave to open up on the show about her eating disorder and her desire to get better. And she, you know, helps us clarify a lot of misconceptions about eating disorders in general. With her book, she delves even deeper. And we talk about that. We talk about what that rock bottom moment was where she knew she needed help, why she chose to share it on the show, and how her relationship with her kids and Evan has changed through her recovery. I think Jackie's book is going to inspire people and show them if they're suffering, they are not alone. Jackie, thank you so much for joining me on Misunderstood. I'm so happy that you're here.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to start by saying it's famously known that you were at one of Teresa's book signings before you are on the show. And recently she was at your book signing. How did that come about? And how did we get
it's like so full circle. So when I didn't even know what I was like going to back, I think that was, God, my kids are 15 now and they were like two. So it was so long ago. I was strolling them and I was walking by and I saw her inside, and I used to watch Jersey. I watched Jersey from the beginning. So I was like, oh, there's Teresa Giudice. So I took my kids inside. And actually, I think that it wasn't a book signing. Now I think it might have just been like the opening of Shoe Store, because I didn't buy a book. And I know you have to buy a book at these things. I didn't buy a book. I just took a picture with her. So I think it might have, everyone said it was a book signing, but I think it was actually like the opening of a shoe store in the town next to me. Mm-hmm. And I went in, took a picture with her. And then famously, we did not get along for a very long time. But, you know, some things have changed this year. And she was really excited for me. And I was so glad that she came.
So you said that you listened or you watched to Housewives of New Jersey. Who was your favorite on the show before you even thought of being on it?
Well, like back in the very beginning, I don't know, like I didn't really like love anybody. I thought they were all just a bunch of characters, but now that I know people, I mean, I really loved Carolyn. I thought that she was great and very strong. I always really liked her. And then, you know, throughout the years I had different people I liked. There were sometimes I took Teresa's side, sometimes I took Melissa's side, but I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I got on the show and like I was meeting these people for real and interacting with them, it was like, you know, it was just so bizarre. To get used to.
Yeah, right. Of course. So how did you actually get approached to be on the show?
Got a Facebook message from a casting agent. And at first I was like, no, thank you. Because we lived around the corner from Siggy Flicker at the time. Mm-hmm. And whenever we would see the trucks outside her house, so we always had to pass her house to get to our house. Mm-hmm. So my husband would always be like, who the hell would do that? Like, who would sign on for this? Because it would always be like 10 trucks and like people with like cameras and speakers. And like, we'd see them all. And he'd be like, who would put their life on camera? So I knew that my husband wouldn't want to do it. So at first I just said no to save myself from all like the grief of like having to beg him. And then I was kind of like, you know what? Maybe I do want to do it. Maybe it's worth asking him, you know, if he would do it. So I called the casting agent back and told them I'd be interested in talking. And we had a phone call and then we had like a FaceTime. And then I guess they record the FaceTime. It's not the same for everybody. Mm-hmm. But with me, they recorded the FaceTime. They send it to the network and the network goes through all the people who do that and then narrows it down. And I just kept making the cut. It was very bizarre because he asked me, what are the chances that you're going to make it? And I said, I don't know, like 1 in 1,000, because I felt like my whole town was interviewing. Mm-hmm. So he was like, all right, go for it. And then I just kept making the cut. It was very strange.
What was that call like when they finally called you and said, you've got the part?
It was crazy. At that point, I had been interviewing for, or like having these discussions for definitely a month and a half. So I wanted it so bad. I wanted it so bad. So it was great. Yeah. I had no idea what I was stepping into, but I mean, I've loved it.
Yeah. So tell me about that first time that you had to film. Like, what was that like?
My first time filming was just in my house. So that was calm. It was great. It was like a little, like I had no idea what the editing process looked like. Mm-hmm. They never really did me dirty with editing. I have no problem with anything like that. But the first cast event I went to, that was something. I was like, it was just so many people and so many cameras and so many people that I've watched on screen for so long. It was the first time I was meeting all of these people.
Right.
Except for Margaret. I knew Margaret already. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it was a really long night. And that scene didn't even make it to the show.
And beforehand, do they tell you like what they want you to do or how the end game should go, or you just let it play out?
Sometimes they'll like let you know what the important things to make sure you discuss are, but they never really set up anything. Like they don't give you a script or anything like that.
No. Right. So, you know, it's very interesting. I'm not somebody who historically, maybe years ago, I watched New Jersey. I haven't watched it in many years. And in preparing for this interview with you, I spent many hours in the last 24 hours watching clips of like all the highlights, but like a lot of stuff from when you were on it. Now, here's my initial reaction. How the hell did you do that? How did you stay in that? I cannot believe, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn here because maybe everyone knows this and I sound like an idiot. That seems so almost abusive. There's so much craziness going on. And
are you talking about the season?
No, I'm talking about the culmination of seasons and behaviors, maybe not even with you, but like just the behaviors. It actually gave me agita. I was like, how is this? You can't even have a conversation sometimes with people without them throwing utensils at someone to get them to listen, without screaming, without accusations about stuff. And I was just like, why would anyone subject themselves to that? And then, you know, I was like, who are these people? Like, if a man behaved that way, they would probably get arrested, threatening people, saying, I'm going to beat your face in, throwing things at them. That never happened. Creating rumors. I was like sick for you, kind of, you know, I thought you handled it really well. And then, you know, not for anything, maybe she's amazing in person, but the way she comes off on the show, Jen, and the way she spoke to you and called you cheap for having pizza. And like, I was just like, I don't get it. How could someone even talk like that? And why is not everyone in an uproar? Like, who are these people? Like, I just thought it was insane. So my question for you is, yeah, how did you stay in this without being like, screw this?
Okay. So first of all, it is not for everybody. It's if you want a drama-free life, this is not the job for you. I like a little excitement. Mm-hmm. I don't mind a little drama. But also it's like, you know, when you have a baby and they say like people only have more than one kid because they forget how like crazy it is at the beginning because the reward is so good. And like, there are a lot of positives that can come from the show. So, I mean, it's a trade-off, you know, yeah. There are times when it gets very dark and it's hard and I cry, but there are great things that come from the show and the platform and the friends I've made. So, you know, I mean, it's a trade-off. There are times when it drives me crazy. As far as things like Jen calling me cheap, that's the kind of petty drama that we all like, because calling me cheap, saying my birthday party sucks, that's the kind of thing you can make up from, you know, and move forward and you don't think about it. That's the kind of stuff I think that makes a good Housewives show. When it gets too dark, that's when I don't like it.
But, well, right. Like accusing people of being in a scandal or in a, you know, anything like that with no facts. And even if there are facts involved, it just seems so like when the cameras go off, you go to sleep at night and you have to go home and deal with your marriage or your kids or your actual friends that you have to see, your job. And I would think that that's really difficult.
That was very hard for me. That was really hard for me. And if you read my book, you know that that was actually the catalyst for me reaching like a rock bottom. I couldn't handle it. But, you know, when you find a way to reconcile after those situations, you're able to move forward, you know, and then you can actually become friends with people that you were previously at war with, you know.
Right. Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. We all love the fall, changing leaves, getting cozy on the couch, watching movies, but it also brings the challenge of dry, dull skin. OneSkin has the must-have skincare that'll make you say goodbye to those cold weather blues and hello to healthy, hydrated, glowing skin. The secret is the revolutionary OS-01 peptide. Their scientists have shown that it can actually reverse the biological age of skin. Let me repeat that to you. It reverses the biological age of your skin. So your skin doesn't just look healthier and more youthful, it's good for your overall wellness too. To combat that cold weather dryness that your skin gets right now and bring back the healthy, hydrated glow you thought was only for summer days, head over to oneskin.co and take a look at their amazing products that will be your skin savior during these colder months. For a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off OneSkin with our code UNDERSTOOD at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. Now, I've been using the products for about 3 weeks now. I'm using the OneSkin OS-01 Face Topical Supplement, and I'm using the eye cream. So I just have to tell you that I've tried medical-grade topical treatments several microneedling sessions, even with radio frequency, spa treatments, retinol medicine, stuff like that, a host of other topical beauty products. Nothing has made the visible difference that OneSkin has. It took about 3 weeks for me to start seeing real results. And this week I happen to be on week 4 and I'm really hooked, you guys. I'm not kidding. I've told people about this product. People that are visiting me have tried the eye cream and the face cream, and they have all ordered it. They love it. And I'm not kidding when I say it's different because it reverses aging. So it's not just putting on, you know, moisture and adding that to your skin. It's really helping. It increases the epidermal thickness to minimize the look of wrinkles. It supports collagen synthesis. You know, it just feels so good. And you honestly, you feel it the second you put it on your skin, but then you really see the results 3 weeks. I mean, that's really what it took for me. So OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. OneSkin addresses skin health at the molecular level, targeting the root causes of aging skin, so skin feels and appears younger. It's time to get started with your new face, eye, and body routine at a discounted rate today. Get 15% off with the code UNDERSTOOD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code UNDERSTOOD. That's OneSkin, oneskin.co with code UNDERSTOOD. We only have one body, one skin, and only you can choose to make it better. Age healthy with OneSkin. Right. What was it like to start to be on the show and then get recognized? Did it feel good? Was it, you know, too much for you? What was it like to get recognized with your children?
Yeah, no, I loved it. I always used to wonder when I was a kid what it would be like to be famous. And I always had this little piece of me that really wanted to be famous, but there was nothing that I could really be famous for, you know? Like, yeah. I was always a good writer, and I thought maybe one day I would write a book that would make me famous. But, you know, this was like easy fame. It's like overnight fame. So I was like, yeah, why not? I loved being recognized. I didn't like the negative social media. It took me a little while to learn how to ignore that and to get used to it. But I mean, it was exciting getting recognized. My kids liked it, you know, and then they got over it. They don't even care anymore, but you know, it's nice to, you know, the free stuff, not like the free, like I don't care about like a package coming to my door, but like, when their favorite sports team offers to let them meet some players before a game, like that kind of stuff, I love. Like, I like to do it for my kids, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So, and when you were kind of going through your darker times, did it affect your children?
Yeah. So when all the cheating rumors about my husband were out, we would fight because he wanted me to do something about it. And I couldn't do anything about it. I always knew my husband didn't cheat on me. I didn't even worry about it for a second. I knew it was a storyline on a show. But he wanted, like, I couldn't do anything about it. It was out of my hands. And that's the dangerous thing about a reality show. Any reality show is once you say something, like, it's out there and there's a portion of the people who are going to believe it no matter what.
Right.
So I couldn't do anything about it. And I had a lot of guilt about that. He was very upset about that. And we really don't fight. We have a really nice cordial relationship, and we were fighting, and my kids saw it and they were very, very upset. And my daughter would cry and they were afraid we were going to get divorced. And that was never happening, but you know, they were scared. They were upset, and he was upset, and I was upset. It was not
I can
good.
Understand that. Yeah. I mean,
if you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't! Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake. Inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.
We are all on the hunt for the perfect holiday gift this season, and I have the best gift that you can give yourself. You've got to check out Honeylove. Honeylove has literally revolutionized bras and shapewear. They support with no underwires, no bulky fabrics, and they're so soft you won't rush to take them off the moment you get home. Honeylove's best-selling crossover bra is so comfortable, yet a little sexy, and it's going to be your go-to for everything. Their shapewear uses targeted compression technology so you can breathe and not feel like you're stuffed in like a sausage. With Honeylove, you don't have to worry about that. You can feel comfortable and confident in whatever you're wearing, which will come in handy for all those holiday events you plan on attending. Plus, for this month only, Honeylove is giving 50% off site-wide. That's huge, you guys. 50% off. Use my code that I'm going to give you in a minute, but visit honeylove.com/understood to shop their November sale and let them know we sent you when the survey asks. You guys, let me explain something to you. So I got two things. I got the crossover bra. I got it in white. I live in Florida. I decided I could use it as like a sports bra. I don't really wear white. The second I got it, I was literally floored. Now I use it as my bra under t-shirts. I got a different color. I got that tannish color to wear under t-shirts. The white one I wear under all my tennis whites. And it looks like a sports bra, but it's super comfortable and it's actually quite beautiful. It has flattering mesh details. It has soft removable cups. You know, the light boning keeps you centered in it. I'm telling you, this is going to be your go-to bra. Like, I'm not joking. Then I got a shapewear piece, which I don't really wear shapewear. So this was the first time I tried it. I got this superpower thong. It looks like, you know, a bodysuit, but it doesn't have the bra that goes with the top. So it's just working on your midsection. And it, you know, is like a thong that you could put, on with pants or a skirt or shorts or whatever. Let me tell you something. It sucked me in and it changed the shape of my body. I was floored. I've never worn anything like this. And let me tell you, I'm going to start wearing it. It was fantastic. And it didn't feel constrictive. Like, you know, sometimes those types of things do. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save up to 50% off site-wide at honeylove.com/understood this month only, you guys. I'm telling you, even think about who you might want to shop for Christmas, because I know it might be weird maybe to be giving, you know, shapewear or bras to your family members, but it's not. It's a great gift. I would be so happy to get this. Someone can send me one. That's 50% off site-wide at honeylove.com/understood. Inventory is limited and the sale ends soon, so don't miss their best deals of the year. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. It's time to ditch the underwire for good. Thanks to Honeylove. I can't believe the holidays are right around the corner. I love this time of year. I love throwing a holiday get together. I always get a little stressed out, but with HelloFresh, I don't have to worry. HelloFresh delivers everything you need right to your front door to help you make an amazing holiday meal. No long lines at the market, no worrying about if you forgot that one ingredient. They take care of it all for you. Not only that, you don't have to worry about being a bad cook because you can't get it wrong with these guys. Not only that, but for the all those holiday parties, HelloFresh Market has the perfect crowd-pleasing charcuterie boards. Oh my God, I love that. No one can resist a good cheese plate. And they have amazing desserts everyone will love. You guys, I'm telling you, this is the perfect solution for having people over. It doesn't even have to be during the holidays. It could be weekends. It could be date night. It could be whatever. And it can even be for your kids. The stuff they have tastes phenomenal. And the way they present it to you so you're able to cook it and put it out is so easy. It takes less than 30 minutes. And I'm telling you, you're going to love it. You have to try it. So I've worked with Green Chef in the past, which is now owned by HelloFresh, and it with a wider array of meal plans to choose from. That's the only difference. But there's something for everyone. I love switching between the brands, and now my listeners can enjoy both brands at a discount with me here at Misunderstood. So go to HelloFresh.com/understoodfree and use the code understoodfree for free breakfast for life. I'm not kidding you guys. This is true. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/understoodfree, all one word, with code understoodfree. Don't miss out on this incredible deal from HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. That would be terrible. Speaking of your husband, one of the things that is different about the Jersey Housewives is that the husbands play such a big part on the show. What did your husband think of his role, about the other guys?
So the first season, he was like, involve me as little as humanly possible, because I think he was concerned. He had no idea what this was. He knew that Jersey was really like a volatile franchise. And he was afraid with his job in finance that it would make him look bad, but it didn't. So his second season, he really like was able to relax a little. He was really involved for like two or three seasons. He was really, really involved. And he got very, very close with the guys. The guys all love each other, but he's been happy to step back a little since I've become a friend. That's been great for my whole family because, you know, my kids are teenagers right now. Mm-hmm. They're young teens, 13 and 15. And like, you know, they're going through changes. They like their privacy now. He is happy. You know, he loves the guys and he's always happy to see them off camera, but on camera, there's always a fight, you know, so right. He'd rather not.
Right. Yeah, that's very interesting. So how has the show changed from your first year to now, do you think?
I don't know that it has that much, except, I mean, this season is different because there's certain cast members who just won't speak to each other at all. So my first few seasons, everybody was able to argue and then make up. And that's not really the case anymore.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. It seems like a lot of the storyline for many years has been the arguing between Teresa and Melissa. And I think that fans have sort of said that they don't want to watch that anymore. Do we feel like there's going to be a new storyline or is that still going on? I know you can't talk much about what you're filming.
There's not. Yeah, I can't talk much about this season, but you're definitely, it's not a season full of Teresa and Melissa arguing. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot of other stuff.
So what is the upcoming vibe of the season? Can you talk about that?
I would say definitely shifting alliances, a lot of new friendships, which is nice. New drama. Okay. You know, it's not Melissa Teresa anymore.
Right. Okay. And talk to me about, you mentioned a few minutes ago about being a friend. How does that happen? Does a cast member get demoted? Is it something that you prefer to be a friend? Is it a pay difference? Like, explain it all.
Yeah. So it's called getting demoted, but I mean, that's, you know, that whoever chooses, I mean, that's whatever. It's called getting demoted. So the difference between a friend and full-time, there's a few key differences. A friend doesn't have a tagline. Doesn't matter. they're not in the cast picture, but you do get a cast photo. You're just not in like the main picture. Fine. Okay. And you don't have a personal storyline. So as a friend, you're involved in all the group events and you're involved in like occasional, like one-on-one scenes to move story forward, but you don't have your own personal storyline. So they don't go into your home and you don't meet your family and all of that. Last season. So there's different reasons why someone might get demoted. So like my reason last year, I was not in a good place with like my eating disorder. I wasn't in a good place with my recovery. I was very shaky still. And I think we all recognized that the drama would not be good for me and that I wasn't ready. So I was made a friend, and that was very hard for me because even though the decision was on everybody's part, it was hard to take a job that you've been so involved in for so many years and to watch everyone else still doing it without you, you know? And people on social media were so cruel. Like every time I posted something, people would be like, shut up, you're demoted, you know, which to me was like a big kick in the ass, you know? So I hated it. This year, I love it. I love it. It is less money, which is fine, but I'm still making good money. Mm-hmm. And I am not as involved in like crazy drama. I get to step back. My family doesn't have to be on it. So I get all the stuff that I want out of it. Platform, the friendships, the filming, the money, without involving my family. Because inevitably you have to involve your family. You have to involve your husband. So my husband doesn't have to take part in any of the drama. He can pick and choose when he wants to come. I can pick and choose when I want to go. So I think friend is the best thing for me now.
I understand having to pull back or them wanting you to, because they thought it would be too much for you with what you were going through. But it almost seems like you were the one that was really creating an authentic storyline. And people, I think fans of yours especially, would have wanted to see that develop. So I thought maybe that was a little bit of odd timing for you. But as long as you're happy with it, I think that's great. And you're still getting the screen time you want. But does that mean that they don't develop that specific storyline with you about your struggle with
my recovery?
Disorder? It just, you become a friend. You're just there.
Well, last season it meant that. But this season was very different. Because of the book, I did have a personal storyline and we do talk about my recovery and people were on board with what I was going through this season. So, you know, it was almost like the word friend almost became like very fluid. You know, it didn't really mean much. I think the only difference between my role as a friend and a full-time is that they're not in my home talking to my family.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and I don't have a tagline. So.
Right. Okay. So you putting your heart and soul into the show and revealing you were struggling with an eating disorder, I think really became a landmark moment for the franchise. It stood out. It was different. I think it touched people in a different way than they've been touched on shows like this before. So let's start at the beginning with that. When did this begin? When did you start to feel like food was becoming an issue for you?
Well, when I was 13, I started to become very conscious of my weight gain. I moved. I had no friends. I was like deserted in a new development in a new town where there was nowhere to walk to. And I moved from a very like urban kind of area. I was in Staten Island. All the houses are on top of each other. Everyone on my block was my friend. And I moved to a new development where there was like no houses on my block. And my parents both worked full time. So I was stuck in my house with nowhere to go, couldn't walk anywhere. And I really had no friends in this town. And I was very lonely and very sad. And I started gaining weight rapidly. And by the time I was a junior in high school, I was like well over 200 pounds. I was just not in a good place. And I hated my body and I just hated everything. And I ate a lot. And then I had no concept of dieting, of how to lose weight, of how to be healthy or eat in moderation. And when I was a senior, a doctor told me that I would never have fun in college if I didn't lose weight. He said, Jackie, you don't want to go to college. And I remember just feeling so desperate in that moment to lose weight. And that was the first day of the rest of my life. I was never not on a diet again. I went to Weight Watchers straight from his office and I learned how to count everything. So food became math to me. Food lost all value as something that you eat for enjoyment or eat for celebration. I lost all sense of hunger. Food just became like a schedule and math. And I never lost that. I lost a lot of weight really quickly. And then I went to college and gained it all back. And I was just in a really bad place for years with my body and with dieting. I just was all over the place, yo-yo dieting, trying diet drugs. And then when I was 26, I decided to start starving myself and see how that worked. And unfortunately, it worked. And I was good at it. And I got so stuck that I couldn't figure out how to get out. And it turned into a real mental illness where the whole world was black and white. So it was like, if I'm fat, I'm miserable. If I'm really, really skinny, I'm happy. And there was no in between. So I kept myself, my priority in life was keeping myself really, really skinny so I could be happy.
But did you feel like people treated you differently when you were skinny versus heavier? And that's 100%. What made you feel better?
100%. Yeah. I mean, like the positive reinforcement when I was losing weight was unbelievable. Now, nobody
like,
gave me
positive. Oh, you look so good. You look
so
much
better. On the way down, it was like, oh my God, can you tell me what you eat? Can you tell me what you do? How long do you exercise? Like people would ask me a million questions and it felt so good for me to like, the lower my sizes got, the better I felt. And so when people would ask me, you know, oh, are you a model? Because I'm tall. And then I got extensions. So I had like long blonde hair and I was tall. I was the person I always envisioned that I wanted to look like, but never did look like. I mean, I had bushy brown hair as a kid. And people would say, oh, do you model? And I'd be like, I can't believe people are actually asking me this question. Like chubby little Jackie, like people are asking me if I'm a model. It's wild. Right. But when I was emaciated, nobody gave me positive reinforcement. It's just that nobody said me, you know, and I had body dysmorphia. So I almost didn't feel like I looked that thin. I felt like other people were just as thin as me. So it was a whole combination. It was a perfect storm of like mental illness and like loneliness. And I just the positive reinforcement and, you know, it just all combined to make me so scared of ever going back to the way that I was because people really did treat me terribly in high school.
Right. I do think it's important to mention though, that when someone is a certain weight, it is healthier to start to lose weight, right? And pay attention to your weight, but it's the way that you have a relationship with food
that
becomes the issue, right?
Right. I'm not endorsing. Listen, I do think people look wonderful at every size, but I'm not going to sit here as like a size like 2-4 and say that I'm you know, like all of a sudden, like body positive, because I mean, I am body positive, but I'm not representing bigger bodies still, you know? So, I don't tell my kids, just eat whatever you want, you know, life's too short. I don't do that. So I do recognize the value in having, you know, a healthy, you know, relationship with food and eating in moderation. So, I do think that's important, but, the way that we treat fat people in this world is just, it just leads to a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, I agree. So when did you meet Evan along this path?
I was fully anorexic for about like 6 months or so when I met
Evan.
When
you say anorexic, just clarify to the listeners what that means. Cause I think people have a vision in their head of what an anorexic person is.
That means that I was eating the bare minimum to get by. So it started as like elimination diet where I started cutting things out of my diet. But after a few weeks that became really, I reverted to my Weight Watchers knowledge, which was eating, the minimum amounts for like the maximum fullness. So by the time I met Evan, I had been doing several months of eating like such a low, like way less calories than my body needed to function. I had been doing that for several months already, like really, really low, like dangerously low.
And did you hide your issues from him? Did he see it? Was it something visible?
No. So when I met Evan, still definitely not thin. Mm-hmm. I was not obese, but I was probably like a size 6, size 8. You know, I wasn't like
that. That's why I asked you that question. Cause when people hear anorexic, they think of the women they see that are like 80 pounds, so gaunt that it's hard to look at them. You don't have to look like that to be anorexic, correct?
Yeah. That's a very big misconception. Anorexia comes in a lot of different body sizes. It's more about like, what you're eating. Mm-hmm. But when I met Evan and I was only a few months in, I was still like a very, very normal size. So I looked healthy. So at first he had no idea. He started to catch on, you know, we'd go out to dinner and he'd see it a little. But then about like a month and a half into dating, he like really, he's a smart guy. And he knew, because I had these little tricks that I would do. Like I would cut up food, chop up food in teeny tiny little portions and then eat that for like an hour and like suck on things that aren't meant to be sucked on, you know, like I would eat jelly beans and like just suck on one for like 5 minutes, you mm-hmm. know? So he was like, I don't understand at first. And he would be like, let's order in together. And he would try, but you know, no one really teaches you how to talk to somebody about this stuff, you know? Yeah. And no one teaches a guy how to deal with a girl who won't eat. Like I refused to eat and there was nothing anyone could do to get me to eat. So he just accepted it. He had to.
Was there anyone you were confiding in at the time or somebody who really turned to you and said, what's going on?
No. My mother would say things to me like, you're emaciated. Your arms look like you just came out of a concentration camp. Because when I got really, really thin, like around the time when I was getting married was just so bad. She would cry. But other than that, people didn't say anything. I remember once I ran into a girl who I went to college with and we ran into each other on the street in New York. And I was like, Robin. And she stopped and she looked at me and her face was like, oh, what did you do to yourself? I remember. And I was so embarrassed. And like, we were just like, hi. And then we walked off. We didn't really even like talk to each other because there was nothing to say. Like we didn't know what to say to each other. And I remember thinking like, is that what people think when they look at me, like that I'm dying? And then it just went away. And I was like, nope, people are probably just jealous. You know, you convince yourself of things. Yeah.
Wow. How does it feel? Explain to someone who is not familiar with an eating disorder. What does it feel like? Is it constantly on your mind? Is it you wake up and you're thinking how you can not eat that day or what you can? I mean, is it something that is literally in everything that you do, or do you just forget about food?
No, you don't forget about food ever. If anything, food becomes more important. So it's like, you have to avoid every temptation. You have to figure out ways to not eat. Food is, it's a full-time job. For me, anorexia was a full-time job and it was part of my life that was always there. And I lived my life around it. So I did have like real true joy and I did have fun and I did have great experiences, but there was always anorexia was always a part of every single thing that I did. I just compartmentalized. So it was like, I knew it was going to be a part of everything. It was a part of my pregnancy. It was a part of my wedding. It was part of every single day. But regular days at home when I didn't have to go to something, I had gotten used to a system of doing it. You know, like I knew what I was going to eat for breakfast. I knew what I was going to eat for lunch. And I ate the same exact things every single solitary day. I knew what I could have as safe snacks. And I knew a maximum amount of calories a day. And after that maximum amount was reached, I was not eating a single thing, nothing else.
And is the goal, I mean, is the enemy the scale or is the friend the scale? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. I mean, I know after I weigh myself, if I weighed myself and it fluctuated by even a half a pound up, I was very upset. I gave myself about a half a pound to fluctuate. And I used to keep very detailed diaries of my weight. And
so your happiness was based on the report that scale gave you every day.
It's not really my happiness, but like my peace of mind.
Right.
You know, like I, even if I gained a half a pound, like I knew what I had to do. So I would just have to work harder, you know, to get it back off.
So when you came into being on the show, I mean, everybody has like skeletons that they're like worried about will come out, or they just throw them all out there so no one can out them on things. Was your relationship with food and your anorexia something that you had identified, put a label on and said, oh gosh, this is something I'm going to need to hide?
No, I didn't. Like in the back of my mind, I knew that there was something seriously wrong with the way that I was eating. But it had been a really long time. By the time I got on the show, I had been doing it for 15 years. So I was like, well, this is just me. You know, this is just the way I am. And there's a lot of people who are thinner than I am. You know, after I had kids, my body didn't get back down to that emaciated look, even though it's eating like basically not like the very, very minimum. And a lot of foods that I ate were not real. They were like fake, like, I don't know, made of like 1800 fake ingredients and full of fiber. So they had very low calories. So I knew that I knew there was something wrong with the way I ate, but I convinced myself that every woman on these shows is very concerned about the way their body looks. And probably everyone is doing something a little like weird with their food intake. And once I convinced myself of that, I was like, okay, well, it's not just me. But I was also very scared of ever talking to anybody about any of it because I didn't want anyone to make me stop.
Yeah.
I had a very irrational fear about somebody like doing like an intervention or what. So I didn't want to talk to anybody about it. I just wanted to leave it as my thing. And once I found out that cameras don't like, they don't get left at your house or anything. You film like a few hours and then you go home.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's easy. Like I can do what I need to do on camera. I knew how to eat. I had a limited amount that I could eat every week. And I saved it for when people were watching. So when I was on camera, I could do that. And then I could just starve when I come home.
Yeah. So talk about that a little bit, because there are so many scenes where people are eating, where you guys are out to lunch or dinner or whatever it is. I know I've heard you talk about this before, but you know, explain to people what that was like, how you would hide different foods or call ahead. I find that so interesting and just so sad at the same time.
Yeah. Well, my priority in life was staying thin. So, I would call restaurants to make sure that they would do certain things for me, like steam stuff, what kind of fish they had. And then I would look up the calories in the fish and make sure of how much of it I could eat. And then everything had a system. I would sit down at a meal and I would look at the plate and I would divide it up in my head into portion sizes and how many ounces of it I could eat for. I mean, I was like a walking calorie guide. So I knew the different kinds of fish. I knew the genres of fish, what a white fish generally has. It would, you know, take the skin off. I would eat a little bit of the side. I knew how to order in a way that let me get by. And, you know, sometimes I would say I had a stomach ache. There was always a system, you know, and I had an amount that I was allowed at each meal. And, you know, I learned that on the shows, it's not so much about what you're eating at these meals. You know, it's more about the conversation. And there's plenty of time where lots of women without eating disorders go in and take a few bites and they're done, you know? Sure. So I learned how to fake it.
Right. Okay. Oh my goodness. So what was the first time you hit like rock bottom that you knew you had to go see someone and you were actually diagnosed with this?
I was never, until recent years, I wasn't diagnosed with it. I didn't give anyone the opportunity to do that. Because I didn't really want to know that. Even though I knew in the back of my head, I had some rock bottoms over the years, like, there was a time in Mexico. I went with Evan to Mexico. We'd been married only a few months and they wouldn't change anything for me because it was all inclusive. So they said they won't change the style of anything on the menu. So I couldn't get anything steamed. The best I could do was leave dressing off of salad. So I I brought with me a lot of tuna fish in small cans in my suitcase, and I ate those the entire vacation, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I didn't eat in the restaurants. I ate them in the bathrooms during our meals. I was excused myself. And that was a real, that I look at as one of my rock bottoms. But it wasn't until I was 45 in May of 2021 where I hit a rock bottom after that whole drama on the show. And I had taken all my stress out on food. And I was really eating very, very little. But you know, when you're older, your body doesn't bounce back the same way. Mm-hmm. And I had a leg injury. And one of the things that I used to do was I had to do a certain amount of cardio in order to feel entitled to eat. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a choice. So I was running through a leg injury and like my body was just falling apart and I didn't have the energy and I didn't have enough food in me. And I just kind of collapsed. And I said to myself, well, like really the first time, like what would happen if I stopped? And I think that moment, I think about that moment, I was on my floor and I was like, you know what? I don't think it would be so bad if I stopped. Like I'm older. I've been married for a long time. Like what's going to happen if I stop? Like the problem was that there were no public figures who were honest about how bad they had an eating disorder and honest about having recovered. So I had nobody that I could look at and be like, well, they stopped. They were really bad and they stopped and they still look fine. You know, they look happy and they're not like 400 pounds and miserable. You know, I didn't know what recovery looked like. Mm-hmm. So once I got far enough along that I was sure that I was on a good path to recovery, I said, you know what? I really want to write a book because people don't know what recovery looks like. People don't know what eating disorders look like. People don't know any of this. And I also felt like as much as I love the show and as limited, they're very limited with how much time they have to tell a story. So my eating disorder story looked like it had a beginning where I was sick, a middle where I got help, and an end where I ate ice cream. And that I felt was doing a big disservice to people because that's not the way that it goes, you know?
Right. I mean, that's so powerful what you're saying, because you're right. I can't think of anyone who's kind of come out publicly and said that they were struggling with this for so many years. They came out and how they got better and how they kind of got over that hump. I mean, the fear must be, crippling about how your body will react. And then also if people will still love you, if your husband will still find you attractive, mm-hmm. all these things. And if you'll be able to stop once you let yourself go and have these things that you've, you know, prevented yourself from having all these years. So yeah. I'm curious how you first finally came out to your husband that you had been suffering from this and what his reaction was.
The first thing I did actually when I had that moment on the floor was I said, let me tell someone before I change my mind. So I came upstairs and Evan was working from home that day because we were still, you know, really into COVID. And I said to him, I want to tell you something. I said, I'm really like, I'm sick and I want to get better. And I told him I wanted to, and he knew exactly what I was talking about. We didn't really go into detail. I told him I wanted to do it on the show because I knew that if people were holding me accountable, I wouldn't fail. Mm-hmm. And he was so happy. I didn't know how he'd react to it because, you know, he's pretty private, which is bizarre for somebody on a show, you know, but he, you know, the show wasn't his choice. But he was really happy about it. I think at that point, he knew that things were really bad for me. He was so happy that I had finally gotten to that point. But I also knew that even if I changed my mind, that door was opened. I had started that conversation and I would never be able to take that back. So I did want to tell somebody before I changed my mind.
Right. I think that's really courageous that you decided to do it publicly and on the show to hold yourself accountable and to make sure that other people were doing that. How did that happen? Like, did you have to go to producers and say, listen, this is what I want to be talking about? Did you have to have a conversation with the cast? Like how did that unfold?
Yeah. I mean, you have a production call before each season starts anyway, to like talk about what's going on in your life and, okay. you know, what you might want to, have, you know, show of your personal life on the show. So they were really into it. So I think that, you know, at that point I had been on the show for a while. And I think that you know, they really did want to help me.
That's great. And yeah. How did your cast members react? Were they supportive? Were they difficult? Did they make fun of you? Like how, off camera and on?
Yeah, I didn't, while I was filming the season, no one knew about it except for one cast member. And she was very supportive, of course. Mm-hmm. But after, when the season was airing, I mean, everybody, even the people that I didn't get along with, everybody was very supportive.
So you mean you would kind of talk about it here and there, but they didn't know you were really struggling with something as serious? Is that what you mean?
Oh, no. I mean, like when I was recovering, they didn't know what was going on in my personal scenes.
They weren't privy to that.
Yeah. So they didn't know what was going on as my personal storyline.
Got it. Okay. So what are the telltale signs for people that are suffering with an eating disorder that people can spot?
You know, I can't really talk so much about bulimia because I never had bulimia. And the reason I never had bulimia, which is when you purge, the reason I never had bulimia is because I didn't trust that all the calories were coming out of my body. And I was very hyper-focused on calories. So for me, it was like calories in, calories out, controlled everything that I did. But, you know, with anorexia, it's hard. I will say that the National Eating Disorder Association, they have a screening tool on their website, which is a lot better than me. And you can go there if somebody in your life or yourself, if you want to see if maybe they're struggling with an eating disorder. But, you know, if you spot dangerous patterns, if you spot somebody always making excuses for food, for not eating, especially your teenage child. If they suddenly are always full when it comes to mealtime, they always have stomach ache, if they go to their room during dinner, you know, if that becomes a pattern, I would say that that's a red flag for sure.
And what would your thoughts be on kids or even adults who like are eating a meal and then it's super important for them to like go running after or go to the gym three times a day after, like you were talking about earlier, it's like you had to reward yourself to be able to put stuff back in the tank, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like, is that a version of having a bad relationship with food? I would think so.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between an eating disorder and disordered eating. And I think most people have some form of disordered eating. But also there's a, you know, people don't know about orthorexia, which is when you go in the other direction with being healthy. I mean, so somebody who like lives and dies by the keto diet or who exercises four times a day, who does three yoga classes in a row, you know, and needs to sweat it all out. Those are all forms. I don't want to say those people have an eating disorder, but you know, those are forms of orthorexia. So, you know, there's a spectrum. Anytime you have a relationship with food that's not about, you know, filling yourself, feeling good, and then not feeling like this need to work it off. Anytime that's distorted, that's some form of disordered eating. So there's a spectrum. When it becomes dangerous, listen, everyone's always on a diet, right? Everyone always wants to lose weight. So I'm not saying that all these people have eating disorders, but when it becomes dangerous and when you get too obsessed with it and it rules your life, and the exercise becomes mandatory, you know, rather than something that you do to stay healthy, get rid of some anxiety, you know, break a sweat once in a while, keep your body moving. When it becomes more than that, you know, and the people around you know.
Yeah. And when it's affecting your time with your family or your friends, I mean, it seems like, you know, there are people who prevent themselves from doing things with others because they're so set on working out or ignoring food situations or whatever. So I think that would be a red flag. Are there things that we should know about that someone that is struggling with an eating disorder would want to be like a way that we should speak to them? Or is there something that we can do for people that we know are struggling that makes them feel better, a way to, you know, handle it? So it's not like accusatory or you need to get help. You know, I can imagine that's not the best way that someone would want to hear that information.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's first, let me say that if it's a child and you're their parent, you can like force them to get help. But if it's an adult, I would say letting them know that you are here for them if they ever want to talk about any issues with food, because then it's not accusatory. And letting them know that you know, specialists, even if you don't, like, you know, specialists, with eating, you know, who could help them with food. Just letting them know that you're there to be a resource and to help them so they don't feel alone. Because I always felt very alone. Like, even if I had decided to recover, like, who the hell would I even talk to? I had no idea. So, yeah. Just letting them know that you're there, which Evan always did. And that made it very easy for me to speak to him about it once I decided I wanted to recover, because I knew that he'd be on board with me. Yeah. So I guess just letting them know that you're there, and also like being helpful as a resource with, you know, helping them find someone they could talk to, because there are many, many therapists and dietitians who specialize in eating disorders.
What would you say are ways to promote a healthy lifestyle in children? So for example, I have an 11-year-old, she's in sixth grade. And I've noticed even this year, there's a lot of talk about fat shaming. And, you know, this, everyone is in a different size in their class. And, you know, kids call other kids fat very easily or ugly very easily. And your self-esteem at that age, listen, at any age, self-esteem is an issue, right? But at that age, when they're developing and they are developing a relationship with themselves, their body, what they're eating, it's so painful to watch as a parent. I hate, you know, when weight or looks are brought into a conversation. It almost brings me to tears even talking about it. So what is a way that when your kids come home and they're not feeling great about themselves because of how other people are talking to them, what's a way to promote a healthy lifestyle and a healthy relationship with food?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. That'll always be hard. Mm-hmm. I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I always remind her that she's, you know, I always remind her that she's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I also tell her, and I'm not the best at talking to people about food because now I'm so concerned with the messages that I give off. So I'm very nervous sometimes about calling certain foods healthy and what that might like do to their mindset. So I do always encourage physical activity. I think that's a no-brainer because that, you know, that's good for you no matter what. This like gets your endorphins going, and physical exercise, you know, especially as a kid, will help keep you in shape. But I also encourage her to have everything in moderation. Enjoy food, have dessert, you know, but like everything in moderation, and make sure, you know, make sure you're getting protein and vegetables, and then like, don't stuff yourself and you'll be fine. You know, right. Don't overthink it. Don't go overboard with anything and you'll be fine.
Right. And I try and remind my daughter that everyone looks different and everyone can be beautiful in different ways and sizes. It's so much different than when we were younger. I'm 48, so we're basically the same age.
Yeah.
I remember the standard of beauty was the Victoria's Secret models. Like that was it. If you didn't look like that, then you were ugly or you were fat or you were not worthy or not sexy. And it's like nowadays, anyone could be sexy and, you know, happy if they are voluptuous or if they're not, as long as, I mean, confidence to me seems like that's the best trait you can have. And 100%. I try and remind my daughter of that, you know?
Yeah.
So, talk to me about the process of writing the book.
It was great. It came pouring out of me. Once I got my book deal, I had no ghostwriter. It was just me. Mm-hmm.
That is so hard, by the way.
No, I loved it. Well, I was always writing, and I was a journalist for many years before this, but never wrote a book. But I would just do stream of consciousness like every day for 2 hours. I would just write until I got to a certain number of words. And then once I had all of my thoughts out, I would go over it like 10 times and really mold it into like a beautiful chapter. And it really didn't take me that long. I wrote it in a few months. I loved it.
And at the end, did you have to have an editor be like, oh, wait, we got to fix all this? Or was it you?
Well, I had an editor at Simon & Schuster. So I would send them, and then they have a whole team, you know, they're like one of the big ones. So they would send it back to me with like red lines or, you know, changes, but not substantive changes to like what I wrote. There were parts where they were like, can you explain this? Or like, I don't understand this, but really what I wrote was what you got.
That's so impressive. What's been the best response that you've, or, you know, the most shocking response you've gotten from the book and doing the press for the book?
Not really shocking. I knew this was coming, but a lot of people opening up to me about their eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I love the ones where people tell me that, you know, now they want to recover. Those are the best. I mean, that's the reason I wrote it. But just a lot of people talking about it for the first time. You know, it's really sad to me how many people struggle in silence.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's been, I get personal notes mailed to me. I get emails to my manager all the time that he sends me. I get a lot of DMs on Instagram. It's just, it's nice. I'm very glad that I'm opening up conversations about it.
That must feel so good. That something that you felt like
so alone
you were, yes, like you were struggling with alone, that no one else was going through it. And also that really, you know, was controlling your life is something that now you can speak openly about, and it's helping so many people. I think that's
really great.
Commendable. Great. And I think your book is going to help a ton of people. And I think you should obviously feel great about it. And it's also so nice that, you know, to not be known just for your part on the show that you are on, but that you are a woman of so many other things. And struggle is okay. And getting through it is even better because you can educate other people on it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. So you should be proud, but thank you for coming. I thank you for, you know, shedding light on this, entire topic. And I guess my last question for you would be, you know, what are your, you talked about it a little bit, but if you had to be succinct about one thing, what is the biggest misconception about anorexia in particular?
That it's about food. It's really not. It's a mental illness. And that's why you need therapy and a dietitian to help you. It's really about anxiety and fear and control. It's not really about the number on the scale. It's about so many mental hangups. And so I would want people to understand that when you tell somebody with anorexia, just eat burger or I'll cook you dinner, like come over, you'll love my meatloaf. Like it doesn't work like that. You know, it's not simple. It's something that you really need to change your mindset about.
So you really need to get help. You can't do it alone.
Yeah. I guess there are people who can do it alone. I'm sure that some people can, but it really is a mental illness and it's not just something that you can snap out of.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Where can people find you if they want to get your book, if they want to follow you on Instagram, and if they want to actually contact you because they have a story they want to share with you?
Yeah. My book is everywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, independent booksellers. I'm on Instagram at Jackie Goldschneider. The book is called The Weight of Beautiful. So that's all you need to know. And I'm at Jackie Goldschneider on Instagram, and DM me. I love messages.
Good. So you read your messages?
I do.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Jackie, so much. I really wish you the best.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Jackie, thank you so much.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.